Welcome to the Bill Cartwright Show with our special guest, writer, leadership guru, Double Don, Paul Hararius. Paul, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Bill. It's an honor to be here and a real pleasure. And it's always a pleasure to share with another Don.
You know, I was just reading as best I could about your story, about your the different jobs you've had. It's really remarkable. I've had my own road that's been pretty long, but yours is very, very hectic. This is what I want to do really quickly. Mm-hmm. I really want to get to know you really, really quickly. Mm-hmm. and everybody else. So let's start all the way back from the beginning.
Oh my. Well,
tell me about where you grew up and tell me about mom and dad.
With pleasure. As a matter of fact, we had a family wedding this weekend and my parents were both there with me. So my job was to pick them up from the farm and take them to the wedding and then get them home safely. So it's a pretty far cry from what I do today, you know, doing headhunting work all over the country, searching out key executives. I grew up on a small farm in Sonoma County.
Nice.
So we were an ag community, and it was a wonderful way to grow up. My parents decided that they wanted to raise a family on the farm. And so we had a lot of responsibilities and open space and fresh air. It was tradition in our family that on your 10th birthday, you could join 4-H and define your project. What enterprise would you be engaging in on the farm to use as a project? So on my 10th birthday, I knew what I wanted. I saved up all my birthday money and I bought 25 baby chicks.
Nice.
And I raised them up, white leghorn pullets, and I started an egg laying business. I put a sign out front on the road, fresh farm eggs for sale. And I was tickled, you know, to be able to do that. I remodeled a part of an old barn and put the chickens in there and raised them up. And after a while, I had saved up some money and I bought some more chickens. And after a couple of years, I bought a sheep and I started showing sheep at the fairs. And then I invested in a dairy cow replacement heifer program. And I started taking on more responsibilities around the farm. And when I was 14, I took over as the foreman for the ranch and plowed a couple acres, raised pumpkins and corn and squash and sold them, right off the road, and ran cows and sheep that fed the family, and the purebred sheep and chickens that we showed in the fair. So tried to make as much money as we could on the farm. My brother and I, it was quite a exciting enterprise. We knew we weren't going to be farmers forever. So, you know, we never felt trapped on the farm. We really felt blessed. And I think that's amazing as a kid to feel blessed that you're growing up the way you are and knowing you have a lot of options. My parents were local. They grew up in Sonoma County. They went to the same high school, but different years. They met afterwards in college in San Francisco. My dad attended the Samuel Heald Institute of Technology and graduated as electrical engineer and spent 33 years working for PG&E, helping companies get power and set a good example for us to work hard and to take good care of your family and be a real balanced life.
Now you mentioned your brother. Now, how many siblings do you have?
I have one older brother, he's 2 years older, Ron, and two younger sisters, Judy and Janice. And the three of them are still in Sonoma County, not too far from the ranch we grew up on. And I'm in Marin County, so I'm the furthest one away, so to speak.
So when you were a high schooler, now this is high school, of course, when I was in high school, I was a goofy kid playing sports all the time. So can you tell us what kind of kid were you in high school?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting because I was multifaceted, I would say. I was an athlete. You know, you grew up on a farm, you're always playing sports and stuff like that as well. And, you know, you're very physical. I was a wrist wrestler because of growing up on the farm, developing a lot of muscles. I also enjoyed basketball and baseball and football. So those are the things that I really enjoyed doing when I could with the other kids. I also enjoyed math and sciences. I was a bit of a little bit of a geeky student. I had good grades and enjoyed that. I also was fascinated with leadership. I had been president of my 4-H club, president of my Future Farmers chapter, president of the Parliamentary Procedures competitive team. And so I was a student body officer in high school as well. So I tried to do it all, so to speak. And it was funny because throughout the day, as the time shifted, I had different groups that I hung out with and affiliated with. So I was one of the few kids that really kind of blended in with many different groups, not the heads, but the athletes, the academics, and the farmers, for example. And so I did all those things.
So as you're about to leave high school and you're about to go to college, I knew where you went, of course, but how did that happen? And what were some of the other options?
Yeah, you know, there was a defining moment when I walked into my high school counselor's office and we talked a little bit about what to major in college. And I told her, look, I'm very interested in law or science and math. Not quite sure what I want to, you know, pursue, but here's my passion. I want to help people build businesses. And so we chatted a little bit and I ended up going to Santa Rosa Junior College in a pre-legal program, general business program. I studied all of those things with the idea that I would transfer to business school. And so I did. I got 2 years in, got my AA degree. I studied physics, chemistry, biology, law, accounting, you know, as many different things as I could. And then transferred to the University of San Francisco. I had been accepted by UC Davis to go there and participate in their agricultural economics program, you know, marrying business and ag. But I really wanted the experience of being in downtown San Francisco and being closer to where I thought I would end up as a career path. And I really liked USF. I had a legacy that I knew a little bit about, but not much. And that's that my uncle had graduated from USF, actually two uncles, but one of whom was a basketball player at USF. And I knew it was a private Catholic school, Jesuit school. And so all those things weighed out. And even though most of my teenage years, I thought I was going to go to UC Davis, I changed my mind. I went to USF to study business and accounting there and learn the language of business.
Very wise decision. Can you remember some of the professors at USF?
Well, one of the most influential when you're an accounting major is Dr. Dave Weiner. He was a very profound individual, a very motivational, very passionate instructor. And he guided people and he said, look, if you're going to study business, you better study accounting. That's the language of business. Yes, sir, Dr. Weiner. If you're going to study accounting, you should go become a CPA. Yes, sir, Dr. Weiner. If you're going to be a CPA, you better go interview with the big 8 CPA firms. Yes, sir. So I did all those things. When I graduated, I actually interviewed 7 of the big 8 and I got 7 job offers. So I was very excited about that and chose the one where I really felt the best about the people. It just, everything made me feel good about that firm. And that was Deloitte at the time. And little did I know that Deloitte had a habit of only making one offer to a USF student each year. I don't know, it was their token USF program or something, but they heavily recruited out of UC Berkeley. And it was just, to me, it just seemed like, oh, that's not fair. Berkeley's just, you know, it's a bigger program, but it's not better than USF's accounting program. But then I found out later that there were several partners who were UC Berkeley grads. So that's why they spent so much time and energy over there. But my job was to help show them that USF produces very good students and accountants and employees as well.
So when you left USF, you felt like you were ready to join the workforce? Felt like you were prepared?
No doubt. I was eager to get into the workforce. You know, I had given serious consideration to going to law school, but I decided that I wanted to get to work. I wanted to make money. I wanted to get out there and learn. I wanted to be in the trenches. And as much as, you know, we did really well. USF students scored very well on the CPA exam. So again, a smaller program, but we were well prepared in a lot of ways. But it was not just accounting. It was accounting, it was business, it was econ. And there was something else too that helped out. And that was an understanding of philosophy and ethics. The Jesuits really kind of inspired me when they said, you know, don't just accept your Catholic faith on surface value, but ask yourself, what's the purpose of religion? And how does this religion compare with other religions? And, you know, helped us to see what we were going to be exposed to in the workaday world. And it was much more valuable than I even appreciated at the time. But it gave us the confidence to go out into the work world, knowing that we knew how to learn. And so you don't have to have all the answers right now. You can learn as you go, be resourceful, and make good decisions. That was how I felt prepared for the workforce.
Now, can you talk about Deloitte and talk about how long you were there, and then talk about what you learned from there that launched you to your next job?
Yeah, you're asking great questions, Bill. I'm impressed. Deloitte is one of the top four global CPA firms. It was a top eight at the time. We call them Big Eight, then Big Five, Big Six, Big Five, then Big Four. And they taught us how to go out and conduct financial audits of companies. So that meant we had checklists we knew we had to follow to make sure that the balance sheets and the income statements of companies were accurately reported and fairly reported. So we had to use generally accepted accounting principles and our understanding of, you know, all the SEC pronouncements and the FASBs and accounting rules and regulations to make sure that these financial statements were presented in a way that investors could rely upon them, or bankers. So anybody who was providing equity or debt to this company could rely on these financial statements to make good decisions. So that was our responsibility. But, you know, to do that, you have to understand the businesses as well. So not just accounting, but you had to understand what was the business they were in, how did they make money, what were their expenses, and how was that all going to show up in their financial statements. And it's kind of exciting because there are times when I remember talking to the scheduler and on a Thursday afternoon, and he's like, "Hey, Paul, you're starting a new job on Monday. You're going to be working on a mining company." Well, I've never talked to a mining company before, you know, so you go to the library, you do some research, you find out what are the issues in mining companies, how do they work, you know, what are the major expenses, and where do they get the revenue from. And I learned about telecommunications companies, mining companies, a uranium trading organization, a nonprofit, you know, KQED radio stations, all these different types of businesses. And so you had to learn them in a hurry. You could learn a little bit from your seniors, but you also had to do some homework on your own. And I love that. And that carries through to my passion today. You know, and that's what I really like about executive search. You keep learning new businesses inside and out. There was a moment in time, another one of those highlight moments, when I was working on an assignment and I said, you know, these guys have a great business plan, but the management team is really not getting along very well. And I could tell there's a lot of tension there, and they're not really getting the full advantage of this good business opportunity. And yet I just finished an assignment with a company that had kind of a boring business plan. It wasn't that exciting, but the management team was really in sync and they worked together really well. They were a high-performing leadership team. And I said, that company is outperforming this one that has a good plan. And the difference is the sense of teamwork at the leadership level. And that's what it struck me. You know, it's not just the accounting, finances, business plans, you know, budgets. It's really about how well the leadership team works as well to determine the success or failure of an organization. And if I want to be a coach to people who are building businesses, I've got to learn that. I've got to master that dynamic. And that's when I started thinking about changing careers and studying more about how do you build good teams in the business environment? And that's when I talked to search consultants about this, and they coached me into coming to work for them as a way for me to learn more about building teams, how they get recruited, how they get put together. And that's how I made the transition from being a CPA working in public accounting to being a recruiter working in a human resources field, recruiting teams.
So if you're looking for, big question, if you're looking for an individual, how do you personally really get to know that person? Does that reflect, because I think there's people have different sides. There's a business side, then there's a personal side. So I'm a pretty feely guy. So, and I know what I like. You know, I'd rather kill you with kindness and get the job done. I'm not going to beat you up. So,
but Bill, that's not what I heard about you playing basketball on the court. You didn't kill him with kindness. actually, a couple of my colleagues said to say hello to you when I shared with them this morning that you and I are going to be talking again. So I'll fill you in those details later. But two of them are from Chicago area. Go ahead, finish your question.
Yeah, but how do you deal with that personality-wise? If you're dealing with leaders, because there's a lot of different ways to lead.
Yes.
What would you prefer to see as a leader?
Yes. I've taken decades to answer that question. I went after 10 years of recruiting and being a partner in two different search firms. I went back to school, got my master's in organizational development and human resources to really help me be a better coach, because I started coaching owners of companies and CEOs and boards and working on this question of how do you lead a high-performing business team. And one of my mentors said, Paul, you need to go back and get a master's degree in organizational development. So I looked around, I researched different programs. I really liked Santa Clara's, I really liked Stanford's. Pepperdine had a great program. USF had a very strong program, and it was local, and I could do it at night. And recently married with a new kid on the way and remodeling a house and being a partner in a search firm, being local was important to me. So I embarked on that program and I took that on. And as part of my thesis work to finish up my master's degree, I worked on a leadership theory. I called it Open Systems Leadership Theory. And I went into industry and I interviewed partners and CPA firms, their employees, and I did this whole elaborate study to show that leaders who exhibit high performance, open systems leadership had the most higher performing employees. They had the better performing departments. And through that process, I found out that there's no one answer of the right leadership style. It is very contingent upon the situation. And within that, you've got heart and soul. So you have the strategy, and then you have the values, you know, and the cultural aspects of it. So you've got both the hard and the soft elements of leadership that in themselves have to be contingent upon the environment. So I started really focusing on, when I'm in conversation with a candidate, I'm trying to assess how they think. And I know there's different patterns of personalities. And so I'm looking to decide which is their dominant styles and where they're comfortable and what styles do they revert to when they're stressed. And I get that information by talking to them, but also through walking them through the resume. I'm like, well, tell me a little bit about, you know, your walk here, your career path. You know, what were the decisions you made to get here? And I'm looking for those value judgments. I'm looking for those patterns. I'm looking to see how they responded to different situations in the past. So looking at the past is a good way to get a feel for the candidate. Then I also talk about the present. What are some of the things going on in your life today? What are some of the pain points? What are some of the motivations for you today? And that helps to determine their behavior as well and how they're going to respond. And then we try to talk a little bit about the future. What is their, you know, dream job? What are they really trying to add? What are they trying to take away in their life? So I ask all those kinds of questions to find out more about what I call their career momentum, and not just the leadership style and motivations, but also their momentum. And I put that together in that kind of a psychological profile. And then I try to assess how would that work with this particular client that I'm working with. Try to compare and contrast those environments to determine how successful this person will be. How happy will they be in this environment? to try to project that into the future. Because again, there's different leadership styles that are required to be successful in different environments. So I try to anticipate those and put that together.
You know, sports, sports to me is always interesting because as an athlete, coaching has changed and it's had to change because it went from being really, really hard, rigid, to kind of in the middle where you could chew a guy out, but you better not touch him. And then now it's very feely. It's very feely. It's all about team. It's all about love. So right. Is business the same? Has it changed? Because I can promise you there's no Bobby Knights anymore. Those people are never going to happen again.
No so chairs being thrown in the boardroom. No.
It's not different?
No, it's not different. It's very similar. I mean, the environment has really changed. I mean, lots of ways too, not just in the leadership behavior. I mean, when I first joined the workforce, you would have your coffee in the morning, you'd have a martini at lunch, and you'd have Coca-Cola's in the afternoon. You know, and I didn't drink coffee when I was a recent college graduate, and I tried to have a cocktail at lunch, but I found that destroyed my afternoon productivity. And I didn't drink sodas either, so I didn't fit in a lot of those ways, but that was very prevalent when I was started working. So that's another way that things have changed. Now it's maybe a smoothie or fresh squeezed grass juice or something like that that people are consuming, and nobody does alcohol at lunch to my knowledge. And the leadership has changed as well. The one thing that hasn't changed is the importance of feedback. You know, and that's something that the rigidity and structure of a big CPA firm was really good because you got feedback on a frequent, regular basis. And that's so important to development of people. And that's still true today. You know, so the importance of feedback is still there. The emotional connections, you know, it's much more prominent today in the work environment than before. The pace of business has picked up, and that puts a lot of pressure on that being able to build relationships. So some of it's improved, some of it's gone down. I kind of feel like the relationships were better many years ago. You know, some of the bigger companies, they took time, they really developed the people, they took a longer term approach to human development of each of their employees. So that was the good part. You know, with the pace of business we have today, it gets harder and harder, especially here in California, Northern California. We've got a lot of entrepreneurialism, a lot of venture capital type businesses. And so if you're going to fail, fail fast. You know, so there's this cycle of turnover and speed that goes on. It's very hard to find a nurturing environment inside that culture, you know, that we have in Northern California. So, but there's a lot of different industries here. There's a lot of different companies and cultures here as well. So you kind of pick and choose and decide what's best for you based on where are you in your career path and your trajectory, and what is it you want to develop in yourself as well, whether it's more technical skill development or leadership skill development. So you find your way, find your pattern inside businesses today. But I think that employers, the bosses are much more concerned about, being more positive and encouragement, similar to sports, in how they work with and manage people. You still have to ask for the feedback to make sure you get it, though. And you have to develop your own mentors today and recruit people to take the time to coach you and give you encouragement.
Maybe a little harder question. Your boss is a male, your boss is a female. Is that an issue? You know what? I've never been in a big corporation. I've never worked for Walgreens. I've never had my boss being a female or a guy. For me, it wouldn't make a difference. But is that an issue?
Do you mean for me or in general?
No. General. Not you. You're not going to have a problem.
Yeah. Yeah, because I've worked with a lot, and I married a strong woman as well. So,
well, I have
if I wasn't sisters. Comfortable with that, I would have a.
I have six sisters, so I know to stay out of the way.
Yep. So no, it's true. And I grew up in a household that respected, male and female, maybe a little bit differently, but equally. So that was a good precedent to come from. And I've worked with a lot of male and female colleagues as well as bosses over the years. I think it's evened out a lot today. So 25 years ago, when I was recruiting for companies, it might come up as an issue for some candidates that didn't want to work for a woman boss. Depending on industries, I noticed a strong correlation between the industries that I was recruiting in and how they accepted genders and worked with them. And whether they just accepted or whether they're really positive and encouraging. And so sometimes I would coach women executives and they said, where can I work at a place where I'll be fully accepted as an equal? And so, I was able to coach them on that and guide them through that process. And I think industries and companies have done a much better job of embracing gender equality. And I'm really happy to see that. Oftentimes it has to start in the boardroom. So I've done a lot of work with lady executives to encourage them to get on boards and network to be on boards of directors as well. So, and I think that's had a positive filtering effect on down through the ranks. The one thing that definitely has improved is initially a lot of women felt that they had to be hard and tough if they were going to be the boss. And I think they've learned that that's not the case, that you can be very successful in your own way, in your own style, and people appreciate that. And I think businesses are benefiting from the diversity of leadership behavior that you have when you've got both male and female leaders in an organization. I think it's very healthy. And I'm hoping we continue to make more headway there.
Yeah, it's, sports a little tricky because, a girl coaching guy, it's going to be a little tricky. But, some of the best coaches I've seen, like one of the best shooting coaches I've ever seen is this gal, Danielle Biglione, who played in the WNBA. She's in Sacramento. So when I have somebody working to shoot, I send them over to her. She's amazing. So people have different talents. And I just think that it's really interesting. I think people have more appreciation for women now because they're brilliant, great athletes. My daughter played at Northwestern and when you have that appreciation, you see it, it goes a long way.
And it takes a lot of different leadership styles in women as well, women's sports or in the boardrooms and executive rooms. My oldest daughter was a all-star West Coast athlete as well, Jesuit, in fact, with Loyola Marymount on the rowing team. And I know that just because she made it to that level of one of the top rowers on the West Coast, doesn't mean you could affix a certain leadership style to her. She was just as unique and different as any guy is. And so you have to be just as adaptive in your leadership style with women as you do with men in business and in sports.
Talk about your relationship with USF now. Because you are so busy, it's hard for me to keep track. So tell us what you're doing.
Yeah, it's really evolved. My relationship with USF has evolved and changed over the years. And when you first graduate, it's like, let me out of here. You go into the big bad world. But I quickly got attracted to the alumni organization. I stayed active with the accounting alumni initially. So I worked my way up to president of the accounting alumni and was invited to work on the alumni council of USF for all of these alumni groups. And then I was invited to serve on the board of governors for 1 year. And what a wonderful experience that was. Just, tremendously positive, impactful people that you're rubbing elbows with. And, I could see great mentors all around the table there. So that was a very eye-opening and encouraging and reinforcing experience. And then over the years, you just pay more attention to some of the messaging in different schools. And I'm always proud of the messaging coming out of the University of San Francisco, whether it's like geez, we're faced with an ethical decision, so we're going to make an ethical decision and shut down the basketball program, for example, which infuriated a lot of San Franciscans to lose the basketball program at USF. But, you know, the father president had put out there, these are the facts, this is what we're going to do in certain circumstances. Those circumstances arose, and he did what he said he was going to do. So, you know, you got to say, hey, hats off for integrity. You know, so again, it's modeling the way. So when my kids started to grow up and my daughters played basketball and I coached them on their fourth and fifth grade basketball teams, I brought them to go watch the USF Lady Dons play basketball so that they would have a role model and they could see these other girls out there playing and enjoying the sport and, you know, putting in the work and the discipline. One time I took them to a game and it was the USF versus Stanford, and Tara Vandeveer was there, the coach. And she said hello to my players as well, who then were able to put on a halftime show of playing basketball, you know, for everybody there in the gym. And that's the kind of activity. I keep bringing them back. And then my daughter, Katie, my other daughter, won a scholarship from USF for academics. And so we went back to the Hilltop. And then you have the Silk Series, which is a wonderful program, put on by one of our alumni. So I've attended almost every one of those programs. I broke away from religion. I have to share this with you, Bill. One of the things that I struggled with when I was at USF was my philosophy classes and studying religions and wondering, well, how do we know that Catholicism is the right one? There's all these different religions. So I said, I need to stop all religious rituals, study all the religions, and find true pathway to spirituality. So I went on that journey for several years and realized at the end of it that you don't go very far in a journey without a pathway. And I didn't pick a new one, so I didn't go anywhere with my spiritual journey. So I said, okay, now I get it. Religion is there to help one on its spiritual journey. I need to get on a road one way or another. So I went back, studied different religions, reclaimed Christianity, and joined a Catholic church in my neighborhood that my kids ended up going to the school there as well. And that brought me back to a real spiritual journey. So that was a lot of fun. And along the way, USF put on spiritual conferences. I ended up mentoring with one of the Jesuits up there on a completely different note that got me connected with him when I was going through some tough times when my business was having a really hard go and it was hard to raise kids, run a business, and do all the things we did. I got a lot of good guidance from one of the Jesuits that I counseled with up there. So there was just all these different ways USF kept coming back in my life. So I serve on the alumni board in the North Bay now and help raise money for the scholarships for USF students. And I help support the sports program, particularly the cross-country team, which I helped co-found in 1976, which was a lot of fun to do that. And that's a whole different story, but another aspect of USF I love.
Awesome. Hey, Paul, we mentioned it earlier a little bit. Talk about your family.
You bet. I married Danielle Herrerius, who was a born Canadian, raised in New York City, London, Paris, New York, high school in Houston, then Palo Alto to go to Stanford, then New York, and then she went to Boston to get her master's at Harvard, and then to LA, where she worked as a consultant to the real estate industry. And then she moved up to Palo Alto to work for a Japanese firm, advising them on highest and best use for their real estate development. And that's where I met her. And she hasn't moved since. So 35 years I've been able to keep her here in the San Francisco Bay Area. So she's a phenomenal person. And we've had three wonderful kids together. Michelle, who's a nurse at Children's National Hospital in Washington, D.C., Michelle has two master's degrees, one Jesuit and one public school, and worked in the Peace Corps, has a big heart for helping kids. And so that's why she's now at Children's National Hospital in Washington, D.C. And she's engaged. And then another daughter, Katie, who lives in Dallas She went to Southern Methodist University and is in a wonderful relationship with a young man that we're hoping might turn into something even more. And then my son, Max, who just graduated UC San Diego in micro and cellular biology, studied and worked in a stem cell research lab, applied to med school, got into three of the top med schools, and decided a week before going that he wasn't going to go that route. So he is actually now home with us. We gave him a couple months to figure out what he's going to do and go find a job, go to work, get some life world experiences, and then learn more, see where life takes him. So he's a wonderful kid. He's also an athlete. He's one of the top hurdlers in high school and a strong hurdler in college. And, you know, all around really good kid. So all wonderful children. We're very proud of him, happy of him, and you know, want the best for him. And Danielle and I looking forward to grandkids someday.
Awesome. Don't worry. It'll happen. I think I told you I'm up to 8 already, but I think that's it.
You're a wealthy man with 8 grandchildren.
I am very, very fortunate. But Paul, thank you so much for being on. You know,
my pleasure.
I've done so much and so accomplished. It's a pleasure always to talk to you. And we have to get together because I still need some info. We got a lot to talk about.
Sure. Sure. That was fun. We're always learning. You know, I think I've read 70 books on business in the last 3 years, just, you know, to try to keep up that learning and ability then to share, you know, and have a full bucket that I can pour into other people as we go. And I think that's what, you know, God really wanted us to do, is be of as much service to as many people as we can in a positive way, you know, during our lifetime. So that's why I have to keep running and stay healthy and keep up my energy.
Well, I'm not going to run with you. You're too fast. we're going to have to meet over a nice...
Yeah, we'll play a little one-on-one.
A little bit. Not too fast.
There you go. Thank you, Bill. Well, it's been a real wonderful pleasure to be a part of your show here today. And thank you very much for the invite and the opportunity.